This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 57 was pre-recorded back on September 10th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Louis Vincent Gav, co-founder of GavCal Economics, is back this week. Louis, there was a dislocation in markets, which was kind of a ripple under the surface that some people didn't even notice. There was a major dislocation between value and growth stocks that occurred last Monday. So that would be a week ago today by the time our listeners are hearing this episode. I don't think that this has really gotten enough attention because overall the market was flat. It seemed like to the average observer who's watching TV, a no big deal day in the market. It seems like it really was a very big deal. Give us a little bit of context. What happened here and why is it important?
I think it is important, partly because if you look at recent years, what we've had has been a massive outperformance of growth, a massive outperformance of tech, a massive outperformance of the U.S. And so I think we probably want to be sensitive to potential changes there, partly because, you know, the valuation gap between growth stocks and value stocks is pretty close to extremes. And so, you know, when there's ripples, there might be an important signal. Now, you know, why did this occur? I think if we take a step back, one of the most frequent questions I've been getting from clients is over the course of the summer is, I don't get it. I've got bond markets that are telling me that growth is going to be terrible. Yield curves are inverting, you know, $17 trillion of negative yielding debt. It's basically the bond market is telling me the world's going to hell in a handbasket. Meanwhile, if I look at stocks, you know, stocks are moving along. And I think this is a dichotomy that you and I also discussed last time. And, you know, most people look at this and think, oh, well, one of these two has to be wrong. Either the bond market is wrong or the equity market is wrong. But actually, perhaps people are listening are hearing the wrong message. And by that, I mean that perhaps both the bond markets and the equity markets have been giving us the same message. And that message has been that whatever happens, we can count on central banks to be massively easy, for central banks to just print aggressively. And I think that's basically what's now priced into both equity markets and bond markets, central banks that just print willy-nilly. Now, for me, one of the interesting developments of recent weeks has been the extent to which, you know, what you could call insiders, either former Treasury officials or former ECB governors, former Fed governors, or even current central bank governors, have all been coming out and trying to walk back some of these expectations. You know, you had Lagarde's interview in the FT where she basically said, well, look, monetary policy has done what it could. The onus is now on fiscal policy to do more. Larry Summers repeated that message in an op-ed as well. You had Hildenbrand, the former Swiss National Bank chairman, who made the same point. Jens Weidmann also made the same point. It seems to me that in recent weeks, you've had a number of the world's grandees come out and say, hey, look, and basically all singing from the same hymn sheet, saying, hey, look, monetary policy has done what it could. The onus is now on fiscal policy. And if that's the case, then you're left in an environment which all of a sudden you can start to put into question this idea that interest rates are super low and going to keep getting lower and lower and lower. All of a sudden, central banks may not be the ally perhaps we thought they were. And I think last time we spoke, you know, we spoke about the dumbbell portfolio, whereby most people look at the world we live in and they think, oh, well, there's not a lot of growth. As a result, central banks will stay easy forever. So I can pay up for growth stocks. So, you know, I'll go out and pay up for U.S. tech stocks. On the flip side, I am still worried that maybe the world implodes because of trade wars or China imploding or Europe imploding, pick your poison. And so I buy overvalued bonds. And in that regard, I own overvalued stocks hedged with overvalued bonds. And, you know, I call this the dumbbell portfolio. What we saw on Monday was basically, I think, the first attack on the dumbbell portfolio, where growth stocks got hit and bond yields also came up. But at the same time, value stocks actually did fine. Energy stocks did well. Financials did well. And so this could be an important rotation, a rotation that makes sense if you think that perhaps central banks aren't going to be quite as dovish as people expect. Now, you know, we have the ECB on Thursday, where obviously I know you're going to release this on Monday, but the ECB comes out this coming Thursday. I obviously don't know what they're going to do yet, but I know that market expectations are sky high. Meanwhile, you know, arguably the ECB is out of ammunition. I mean, if they cut interest rates further, it kills the banks. If they force the banks to sell them their loans, that's not good news for the banks. And so, you know, perhaps you can make an argument, and we'll know, you know, in the next 48 hours or so, where the ECB comes out and says, actually, you know, we're monitoring the situation, you know, we stand ready to act, but ends up doing a whole lot of nothing. And if that's the case, of course, German bond yields, all the EMU bond yields come back up pretty quickly. And with this rise in bond yields, you'd have a significant rotation in the markets. All of a sudden, perhaps you no longer want to overweight the U.S. Perhaps you no longer want to underweight financials. Perhaps you no longer want to overweight tech. Maybe that's an inkling of that is what we saw on Monday.
I just want to clarify for our listeners that we did tape this interview before the ECB's meeting, which will be last Thursday by the time you're hearing this. So Louis and I are not aware of what has happened at the ECB. Louis, I want to come back to your theory about the stock market and the bond market, maybe not really sending us conflicting signals. After all, as you described it, maybe they're both just signaling that central banks are going to continue to ease aggressively. If that were the case, an argument could be made, okay, well, then the third leg in this balance scale has to be the U.S. dollar, and the U.S. dollar has to take a major turn south in order for what you described to make sense. Would you agree with that view, or can the dollar continue to be strong even in the face of what you described?
Well, you know, I think we had a bit of this debate at your January event about 9 months ago in Vancouver, and that was a terrific event. And if you recall, you know, my argument for being bearish the dollar at that time was that expectations for Fed rate hikes were way too high. Now, today, of course, expectations have shifted dramatically. And we've gone from back in January, people expecting rate hikes, to today, people expecting 3 rate cuts over the next 3 meetings. Of course, people also expect massive new round of QE and perhaps further interest rate cuts from the ECB, perhaps from Japan and others. So the problem with currencies is, of course, the question becomes, who do you judge them against? Now, if you assume that the market is right, that we will get 3 Fed rate cuts, obviously, you know, I don't see that as being particularly bullish for the US dollar. If you think actually the market is wrong, we are not going to get 3 Fed rate cuts, the initial reaction might be, oh, well, so that'll be bullish dollar, right? Because obviously market expectations will be disappointed. Except that if at the same time, the ECB proves to be less dovish than people expect, except if the BOJ proves to be less dovish than people expect, except if the People's Bank of China proves to be less dovish than people expect. Basically today, you know, I think every currency out there is priced for massive easing, and every asset, you know, stocks, bonds, they're all priced for very aggressive easing from central banks. And that's the question I think confronting every investor is, are we going to get that or not? I think we're not. I think a lot of the central banks, again, you listen to the central bankers over the past 2-3 weeks, a lot of them have been backpedaling the bearishness and the dovishness. And so then indeed the question becomes, you know, how does all this settle on the currency front? What I do note is that when it comes to the U.S., you know, the U.S. dollar is hardly cheap now. And so, you know, in this period of uncertainty, when you're not quite sure what to do, it's usually better to own the undervalued stuff than the overvalued stuff. When markets are priced for very aggressively priced for a scenario, and that scenario doesn't happen, there can be easily some dislocations, especially if everybody is sunning themselves on the same side of the ship as is today. So when it comes to currencies, you know, I'd rather hang out at this point in the very undervalued currencies that basically the ones with the queen's head on the banknotes. So I like the Canadian dollar. I like the sterling. To a lesser extent, the Aussie dollar and the Kiwi dollar, because they're not as undervalued as the loonie and the pound. For me, these are the currencies at this point that make more sense than the US dollar.
Based on what you just said, Louis, about the market being over-positioned to expect more accommodation than you think is really going to happen, how do you feel about gold at these lofty levels based on that?
Well, first, I don't think gold is at lofty levels. I do believe we've started a bull market, a structural bull market on gold. And structural bull markets on gold tend to last 4, 5, 6 years. You know, we've cracked above all the moving averages. Gold managed to strengthen even in the face of a stronger U.S. dollar. You know, you take all the normal boxes. Most importantly, you know, for me, part of this driver of the bull market in gold is that you've had one very important actor that have been marginal sellers for the past 20 years, i.e. central banks, which were constantly selling gold, have now turned around and become marginal buyers again. And you have central banks, you know, across Asia, across Central Asia, even in Europe, buying gold again. So, you know, I think when you have a significant actor moving from being a marginal seller to a marginal buyer, it tends to be quite bullish. So I do think we have started a structural bull market on gold. Having said that, today, you know, the big rally in gold that we saw over the course of the summer found its source in, you know, success has many fathers. There were many drivers of this bull market. One of them, of course, was the collapse in bond yields everywhere. You know, as bond yields collapse and even move into negative territory, why wouldn't you rather own gold than bonds? So I think there was some of that happening. But it wasn't just that. I think you and I also talked before about how the fear of a Tiananmen event in Hong Kong led to a panic bid in both gold and bonds. Because, you know, if you had a Tiananmen event in Hong Kong, the consequences for global trade would be catastrophic because most people would probably blockade China. And so this would be a bigger shock than Lehman Brothers. Now, of course, I don't believe for a second that China's going to send its troops into Hong Kong. But for a little while, you know, I think a lot of people believe that. As these fears abate, now that, you know, the demonstrations in Hong Kong are abating, as the fears of a new Tiananmen abate, you know, I think the panic buying on gold is also abates. So, you know, I look at gold today, the bottom line is I think we'll get a better entry point. As yields on bonds rise again, as the panic in, surrounding Hong Kong and China subsides, you know, gold could easily lose a few percent. And so, you know, it doesn't mean, I don't think it puts into question the fact that it remains in a structural bull market. So for long-term holders, you know, who don't care about the fluctuation, yeah, you just ignore it. For others, you probably get a better buying opportunity a little later this year.
Louis, while we're on the subject of Hong Kong, Carrie Lam surprised a lot of people by withdrawing the extradition bill, which had been a source of much of the controversy. What do you make of that? Is that an indication that the protesters won, or is there more to the story?
To be honest, what took her so long is a bit of a mystery to me. It was very obvious that bill was a non-starter, not only because, of course, you had 1.7 million people on the streets, but actually the entire Hong Kong legal profession, the lawyers, the judges, et cetera, were all, you know, fairly adamantly against it. So that bill wasn't going anywhere. So it's definitely a good thing that, you know, she confronted reality and pulled it. Have the demonstrators won? In a way, yes. You know, let's not forget the demonstrations started because of this bill. And so that's been taken away. But behind these demonstrations, there were, of course, a number of other issues, not least of which social and economic issues. You know, one of the big challenges in Hong Kong, as you well know, is the cost of real estate. And the fact that a lot of young people feel today that they'll never be able to basically have a piece of ownership in society. That's the part that the government now has to tackle, and I would say tackle fairly quickly. And, you know, through a big plan of social housing. If they don't tackle that bit, there will be more demonstrations in the future. Now, of course, you could say, well, there's still demonstrations right now. You know, we just had some more this weekend. But obviously, the numbers of people going to these demonstrations is much lower. The intensity is dying down. And in that regard, it looks a lot like the Yellow Jacket movement that we had in France. If you remember, the Yellow Jacket movement came about because President Macron tried to hike taxes on gasoline, which everybody was very much against, especially people living in the countryside. There were huge demonstrations for months. In the end, Macron backed off, pulled the tax hike, and there were people still demonstrated after that, but it was just a much, much smaller number that could be managed much more efficiently, as opposed to the Yellow Jackets that just basically paralyzed France for weekend after weekend back at the end of last year. And so it's the same thing for Hong Kong. But again, you know, let's not kid ourselves that there's not big social tensions behind all of this. And let's not kid ourselves as well that these demonstrations aren't going to have a significant economic cost. You know, tourism in Hong Kong has plummeted. Anybody who works in the luxury industry will tell you that, you know, their sales are down 30, 40, 50%. So it's going to have a lasting economic impact.
Louis, I can't thank you enough for a fantastic interview. We look forward to checking back in with you in a few weeks for another update. Listeners, stay tuned. We've got a fantastic week of content coming up for you on Macro Voices this week. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.